Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Happy New Year!
Oh my gosh! Happy New Year! Jenny, will you do me a favor and will you ask me who I am?
Who are you?
I am Barbara Walters and this is 2020.
Wow.
That was for
I should
seven and a
get
half
going.
I've been waiting all this time to make that joke.
I'm so happy that you finally got what you have desired for so long. I've just been saying I'm 2020 Jenny.
2020 Jenny? Yeah, that sounds nice. Right. It doesn't really work for Kristen, so I had to go with the dad joke.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, bad one. Yeah.
either you get it or you don't. And if you do, then you're old. And if you don't, then congratulations. Okay, so we have a couple of things before we head on into Shadow. I just heard earlier today the song that Jenny is working on, and you should get excited for that at the end of the episode because it's a dancing hit, I think.
Nothing but the highest quality, you know, ideal in nuance and ideal in subtlety and metaphor. I wonder what this song will be like.
I wonder. I want to let everyone know that I discovered a couple of months ago that our patron supporters, our supporters on Patreon, they do a million things. And one of them is that they have a pen pal exchange. And I flipped out when I found out and was like, why am I not invited to the pen pal exchange? To which I became invited. Michaela is the person who's running the pen pal exchange over there. And so I'm telling you all, in case you, like me, did not know, that the signups are open now. The next round of signups, if you want a pen pal, for our patrons from today, January 8th, until January 22nd. It's really cute. You just fill out a form. You say, like, if you want to stay within the U.S. or if you're willing to send your letters internationally. And then there's even a little place where you say, like, I've seen the whole series, you can spoil me, or like, I haven't seen it yet, you can't. It's really, really cute. And we'll put up the forum on Patreon and on the secret Facebook group from Michaela. And Michaela, thank you for spearheading that. It's really, really great. And I'm doing it. I don't know if you're going to do it, Jenny, but I'm going to definitely sign up for it and have a pen pal in there.
Wow. Speaking of incredibly important messages, have I got one for you? It's the Sexual Tension Award results from last episode. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
With a deeply disappointing 5% of the vote in fourth place, we have the rightful heirs to the crown, but alas, it shall not be Xander and Riley's butt.
I mean, it was hilarious. Also, the fact that my notes have Riley's butt, 5% is like a real... it's just really funny to me to look at.
In second place, well, there's some stiff competition, no pun intended, in this episode. In third place, we have, with 23% of the vote, Spike and Angel. Working our way through the chain of Spike nominations, we have in second place with 29% of the vote, Spike and Drew.
Isn't that incredible? Spike sucked blood off of Drusilla sucked blood off of Spike's finger and still only managed to garner 29%.
Shocking.
Tough episode.
But the people want what the people want. And here in first place with 43% of the vote, it's Spike and Buffy. You're welcome.
I mean, of course it had to be. It's full for love. We would have been absolutely scandalized had they not won this vote off. So congratulations, Spike, Buffy. Your trophy is in the mail. Yes. Jenny.
Yo.
Are you ready for the first spooky news of 2020?
This better be good. You better start the decade correctly.
Okay, Jenny, well, Lindsay S. sent in a story that is mildly spooky and very relevant to today's episode.
Ooh.
It's a story that comes from Boston's local NPR affiliate, and the title of the story is Baby Anacondas Born at a New England Aquarium Without any male snakes involved.
Hell yeah. Life finds a way. Baby.
Yeah. So this was like very unexpected. It's only happened. This is only the second time that it's been recorded that something like this has happened. It happens more with like plants and invertebrates. Invertebrates?
I believe it's brates.
So like wasps and ants, you see this thing which is called parthenogenesis. And parthenogenesis can be done in one of two ways. One, the entity, animal, thing creates itself as a clone. And in the other one, it sort of like rearranges some shit and then you don't get a full clone, but it doesn't need the anything else. So this anaconda, two of the snake babies survived out of like 18 snake babies. And they were tested, they are exact clones of the mom.
Whoa.
So unlike most snake species, anacondas don't lay eggs. So when they walked into this aquarium, they saw this snake literally giving birth to little snakes. It wasn't dropping eggs. It was like little babies. 18 baby snakes came out of this anaconda. So I thought today on the first day, the first episode of 2020 here at Buffering, and an episode where we get yet another snake, demon, lizard, monster, if you will, we could hear some spooky news that's actually not so spooky, because fuck yeah, lady snake.
Wow. Well, it's officially 2020, as we've already mentioned, but that means it's currently the year of 2020 prom, which has not yet happened, which still waits for us upon the golden horizon. Our live taping of I Was Made to Love You is sold out, but there are still some prom bids left. You can find them at BufferingTheVampireSlayer.com. Just click on events and you can find all the relevant info there. Please join us for our most formal occasion of the year.
Yes, please do. So excited. We already have some costumes in the works for this prom.
We do?
Yes, we do. Well, I'll remind you after we stop taping, okay. Jenny.
Okay.
Other things I would like to remind all of you of are that we have two Patreon events coming up. January 11th, which is this weekend, we'll be watching Scream 2 together. All of the details for that can be found on our Patreon page and also on our Facebook page, the secret Facebook page, of course. And on the 22nd of February, Jenny will be playing you all of your favorite Buffering songs. Jenny, I hope that you learn this song for this episode for the next...
Oh, hell yeah.
Buffering concert, because I think it's going to be a real jam to hear live as well.
Excellent. Yeah.
And of course, you can find out more and join our Patreon family over at BufferingTheVampireSlayer.com. Just click on Patreon. One other thing before we roll over into this episode. Holy shit, Jenny, what the fuck happened a couple of days ago? We must make sure that everyone knows.
Okay, let's see. You're asking me a question, and I need some time to think of the answer to that question.
I can give you some
music you can play.
Yeah, let me give you
the answer.
Yeah, here you go.
Wow, did you see that we were on frickin' Jeopardy? We were an answer on frickin' Jeopardy? Ah!
We were the $200 clue. How do you talk about it? The $200 answer. Right? Yes, the $200 answer in the podcast category. The answer was completes the title of a podcast devoted to a Sarah Michelle Gellar series, Buffering. And our friend... Just kidding. We don't know Karen, but this lady. This whole other Karen, this lady named Karen who was on Jeopardy was like, bleep, bloop, the Vampire Slayer. And Jenny and I have never been so excited in our entire lives. I mean, I literally was like just pacing around my house in excitement for like 3 hours.
You know, I've been running around the house all weekend now, humming to myself Jeopardy, the song, not the da-na-na-na song, but the song by the Greg Keen band that was brought into my consciousness because Weird Al Yankovic parodied it. But basically, the chorus of the original is, I was in Jeopardy, baby, ooh.
Because we were in Jeopardy. We were in Jeopardy, baby, ooh.
Great. They're going to love it.
Wow. So now that we've let you know that we have officially peaked, the mountain does not go any higher than this. It's done. It's done. Thank you for listening. It's been lovely. We're going to roll you right over into the theme song and another episode of our podcast featured on the very popular Totally. We're immortalized. That's it.
I feel very powerful.
Me too.
You know, I sent my dad a Jeopardy question a day calendar for Christmas. And I wonder if one day later we'll be anthologized in a Jeopardy question a day.
My God. Calendar. You should, Jenny, you should make your dad a calendar next year.
Ha!
That's just every day.
Yeah, is that us. One. Beautiful. Love it. Thank you.
All right. Let's get into the episode.
Indeed. Hello and welcome to Buffering the Vampire Slayer, a podcast where we are watching and discussing every episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer one by one, spoiler free. I'm Jenny Owen Youngs.
And I am Kristen Russo. This week we are back. Happy 2020. We are here to talk to you about Buffy Season 5, Episode 8, Shadow. Stay tuned at the end of this podcast every other week for an original song written by Jenny. Jenny, it's about a snake this week, isn't it?
It's about a great big snake.
Can't wait to hear it. Recapping the Buffy episode we are discussing. And also, if you are looking for something to do in 2020 and have not yet started listening to our sister podcast, Angel on Top, hosted by Brittany Ashley and Laura Zach, you should be doing that. It is fantastic, and it goes in tandem with our watch. So they are going to be back next week with Season 2, Episode 8 of Angel. Get on it.
Bing. Bong.
Yes.
As I always say.
As you do always say.
Well, Shadow was written by David Fury and directed by Dan Attias.
Mm.
And originally aired, are you buckle up, it originally aired on November 21st. 2000, my last day of being 18.
Buffy is, in fact, all in relation to what age you were and how far away you were from celebrating your next birthday.
It's all very carefully planned.
This is the one where, according to IMDb, Glory transforms a snake into a terrifying monster in her quest to find the key. Just a side note, I think that's debatable, the terrifying aspect, but we'll get into that. And Joyce is hospitalized after being diagnosed with an illness. This is the one where there's a great big snake.
There's a great big snake. It's got some flashing red eyes, but I guess we can wait to get to that.
This is like the era of we have just discovered CGI. Like, not just discovered it, but like just maybe it got cheap enough to use more frequently, perhaps. But it is just like, so I just watched, Jenny, I know you know this, and most of the people who are listening know this because I had a long Twitter party about this, but I just watched all the Star Wars of them, all nine. I watched them in a week, and I went from the ones made in the 80s to the ones made in the early aughts to the ones then made currently. And the CGI journey that you have is like where they were in the Natalie Portman years of the Star Wars trilogies is where we are now in Buffy. And you can totally see the like parallels of just like you want to just put your head in the sand and be like, why have you done this? It was so much better when you were sculpting things from like whatever you could find in the prop room, because this is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think there are like some really nice practical effects, like the coming from the side eyelids, like the translucent eyelids that we see, which are a practical effect, look really, I think they look, considering what they're mounted on, I think they look pretty good.
Well, and that's the thing.
But then what's worse, Kristen, what's worse? A nightmarishly bad CGI snake man whipping through town from like a bird's eye view, or a huge, thick, really dead looking practical snake tail that's being filmed close up, just like dragging across the floor of a church.
I actually very cleanly vote that the CGI is worse. That's what I was going to say. That, like, because we get both. There is a real snake. I sent Jenny a really fantastic photo right before we started taping that I found. I was looking for a GIF of Buffy riding the snake, which I will make, never you fear. Myself, I did not find one. I found this picture of the snake man in goofing around, I guess, on set with like a towel wrapped around his waist holding a roll of toilet paper. So, there was a real monster snake and then the CGI, and they're both a little rough, but I wish that we had had a goofy snake tail dragging across the floor much more than I wanted any of that horrible CGI.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get into the episode. Apparently, we're starting off. I mean, hey, what better way to start a new year than by an in-depth discussion of a demon lizard? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think we're actually overdue.
We are. It's been a minute. let's do a vote off, actually. I think we should do a vote off of your favorite demon lizard to date. And we'll do the frat lizard, the mayor snake, and the cobra snake. Right? Let's see where everybody lands.
Wow, yeah, they love snakes on this show.
They fucking love a snake. So the previously on sets us up for all of the things. And it's kind of an extensive previously on because we took a pretty hard turn with Fool for Love, right? Like, we went down a very particular path and they're like, okay, everybody regroup. Remember, we've got Glory, who gets named in this episode. We finally can call her all of her supremely magnificent names. And we get that Dawn is the key. We get that Joyce is sick. We get that Riley is feeling left out. We get that Spike is in love with Buffy. So we're set up to like, remember, okay, let's reorient. Here we go.
Yeah. And unpopular opinion of mine. Wow, I hate hospitals and medical scanning machines. Why do we have to pick up here? I know why we have to pick up here, but
yeah,
this just automatically cranks my viewing stress level up.
Yeah. So Joyce is sort of like being put into the CAT scan machine. And it's really, I mean, it is upsetting, but it's also really beautiful. The way that they like shot it, I think, like the light on her face. And it's just very, it's very haunting. Even if you are not as upset as hospitals as Jenny is, like, it is very haunting, the way that they set up this opening scene. So she's going in to get a CAT scan, and Dawn and Buffy are in the waiting room, and Dawn is very adorably like, so what about cats? Like, where are the cats?
Yeah. Show me the cats.
Show me those cats and cat scan.
Now, if they had cats at a hospital, I'd probably like them a lot more.
I mean, honestly, that CAT scan machine would be a lot better if there were a couple of cats just hanging around, you know?
Or just a couple, like a pair of cat ears on top of the machine.
Oh, cute. Yeah, that'd be cute. But Buffy and this is like a big episode for Buffy and Dawn. For a lot of reasons, but like we see it start here where Dawn says this thing about the cats, and Buffy goes to get annoyed and then has like the space to realize my little sister is terrified and I need to be here for her. So she holds her. And then we go to the magic box where, I mean, a very pivotal part of this episode, Jenny, hinges on the yellow pages, which really...
Now, kids, the yellow pages were like a corporeal Google, but only for businesses within a certain range.
Yes, you'd only get
information about local businesses and also
and people.
The home, like the landlines of people around you.
I mean, it was like, you know, I don't know how kids today prank call, but it was the main source for the fun of prank calling people was the yellow pages.
Would you prank call people you knew or people you didn't
know? No, people I didn't know. Like, we would just like open the phone book and find a phone number and then call somebody. And I don't even remember what we would say, but, you know, we would laugh and have a great time. I'm watching 6 Feet Under for the first time, and I just watched an episode because, you know, everyone starts with a death. And I just watched an episode that starts with three girls doing exactly that. They're prank calling, and the one laughs so hard that she falls off the bed and snaps her neck and dies. So anyway.
Oh my fucking God.
So kids, be careful with your prank calls. But yeah, the yellow pages were the businesses and the white pages were the people or the reverse?
I believe that's correct. Yeah.
That's correct. Okay. They put a beautiful ad, just beautiful ad. I actually disagree with Tara's assessment that the font is too small. I think you can read everything perfectly. It's a good size.
No, I think she was saying your one-stop spot to shop for all your occult needs. This is hard to read.
Oh, just because it's a very wordy
Yeah, because it's like a little bit of it's like a minor tongue twister.
Did you take a look at this ad, Jenny? It's pretty wonderful.
Tell me all about it.
Well, I mean, so you have the slogan, right? And then you have these like little starbursts of like this thing and that thing, typical of many an ad. And there's four starbursts, and one is like potions, and one is like crystals, and then one is like death charms. And then the fourth one says lollipops for kids. So
what the hell?
And it's like right next to death charms. It's really special. And I did more investigation because there's a phone number on it. And shout out to our Santa Barbara folks who have been making the claim for quite some time that this is based as Santa Barbara, that Sunnydale is Santa Barbara. The area code is 805, which is a Santa Barbara area code, everybody.
Well, so. Well.
Detective Kristen on the fucking case, everyone.
And also in this scene, we're getting so many great things. We're getting Anya asking if she's been mentioned in the ad. She's very excited that there's an ad in the Yellow Pages and expects that, of course, she wouldn't be mentioned. And
oh my God, does Anya have a touch of Gabby Dunn? Is that what I'm putting together? She's like, love to be
mentioned. She loves being mentioned. And the Scoobies are communicating to Giles that when they made a plan with Riley to go weed out that vampire nest together, mm-hmm. Riley, in fact, went off by his lonesome.
Yeah.
And blew up the tomb. Tomb went boom. And, you know, he's like putting himself at risk, and Xander is concerned.
And I want to give another shout out to Anya, because not only does she like look for herself in the ad, but then she like has this moment where she's like, this is the first time I've not wanted a slaughter in the morning. Like, I'm really growing. Like, she's really like clocking her personal growth from like vengeance demon to human form. And then everybody is like, hey guys, remember Glory? Oh yeah.
Yeah, right. Also a little bit of set color. I don't know if you've noticed some of the signage around the magic box cash register.
Yeah.
There's a sign that says shoplifters will be transfigured.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a little sign that says magic happens.
If you work in a, what does it say?
Magic happens.
Oh,
I can't tell if it's supposed to be like shit happens or if it's supposed to be like magic happens and there's nothing you can do about it. Person who doesn't like magic, so shut up.
Like they put it up after Tara's family left.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, if you work in a shop, I really hope that you have taken it upon yourself to put up the shoplifters will be transfigured sign, because it seems like the best thing that you could ever give a nod to Buffy.
Yeah, I mean, it's a threat that it seems more terrifying than being prosecuted. At least with prosecution, you have a shot.
I mean, because like Amy's still a fucking rat as far as we know. We haven't seen her, but like transmogrification can be, you know, many seasons long. Okay, so.
So they're speculating about this woman and like, man, she's probably hanging out somewhere where bad guys usually hang out, maybe like a sewer or something. And hard cut to what I guess is supposed to be like a very luxurious hotel room.
Yeah.
There is a round bed, and I have so many questions.
Mm.
Where do you get sheets for a round bed? Maybe I just have the one question. And how do you make that? That seems like, you know how you like, it's easier to make a rectangular bed with like somebody on each side?
Yeah. Well, yeah, because like even if you got a custom made fitted sheet for your round bed, your blanket, even if your top sheet was round, tucking it in would be a living nightmare. You'd have to kind of like go all the way around tucking a little bit as you went each little.
Yeah.
That's that. I don't want a round bed is what I've learned just now.
Yeah. No thanks, Casper. Keep your round mattress that you've been piloting.
So yeah, Glory is like living it the fuck up. I guess that we are to believe that her salary is incredibly high for
I like
work that
you
doing.
Just assume she's on salary.
She's Yeah, she's not freelancing this shit. She's getting a weekly salary, and okay, she's sure, spending sure. it all. This is also
on shoes.
Yeah, so she's wearing phenomenal pajamas. She's wearing. Listen, let's be real. This whole Glory is just decked out in the most beautiful fucking shit all the time. She's wearing like gorgeous pajamas right now that are like leather or sorry, I got ahead of myself. Velvet pants and like this beautiful shirt. She's got 4,000 boxes of shoes on the bed that she's trying on. Later, we'll see her in a red leather dress. Jenny, something else that we get in this scene, and we don't really spoil too much in this show, but I will say that these nicknames, if this is your first viewing of Glory, are going to continue, and they will simply just get better. I wrote down a few of the names that Dreg, who we meet for the first time, one of Glory's minions, I guess, is what we'll call this guy, calls her most beauteous and supremely magnificent one, most tingly and wonderful glorificus, which I believe is her full name, shiny special one, your terrifically smooth one, and your creamy coolness, all in this one scene. We get all five of those names.
Yeah, working overtime.
Yeah, and then of course Glory sees in her copy of the Yellow Pages.
Oh my God, it's already open to that page, and man, what a well-timed reprinting of the latest edition of the Sunnydale phone book. Can you even believe the synchronicity at work here?
I mean, you know, Yellow Pages, not to be underestimated, very powerful tools in the early aughts and the late 90s. So
remember how you would like just get like a huge brick of one dropped on your doorstep, like,
yeah,
probably every quarter.
I read up on Yellow Pages and I found out that like in their prime, they would use 600,000 tons of paper annually. So,
jeez.
Yeah. And the first phone book came out in 1878 in New Haven, Connecticut, which I thought was
fun.
Wow. Yeah. So there's your phone book facts, what everybody wanted from this episode. So Glory rips the ad out of the Yellow Pages so that she can find the magic box. And we cut to Buffy's house. And Riley is walking in and he's like, oh no, the door is unlocked. And he opens the door and he's like, footprints? Oh no. And Jenny, we
footprints.
We have a yeah, I just imagine Spike had some like muddy feet when he walked in.
Sure.
We have a jingle that we never get to use, so let's play it for Riley.
Detective Riley.
Beautiful. Detective Riley on the fucking case. We cut to Spike, who is upstairs. And what is he doing, Jenny?
He is having a good, long, euphoric sniff of fuzzy pink sweater that belongs to none other than Buffy the Vampire Slayer. But lo, he is caught, and he quickly whips the sweater behind his back as though he were up to nothing. And Riley's like, what are you doing here? And Spike is like, me? What are you doing here? And Riley is very appropriately like, looking for the girl who's going to rip your arms off when she finds out you were in her bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to take this opportunity to wave the white flag of peace and alert people that Riley didn't say, I'm going to kick your ass. He said, my very strong, very hot girlfriend is going to rip your arms off.
Okay, yeah, that's a good point. We are you haven't heard it yet, but you're going to hear it in a few weeks, our interview with Mark Blucas. And you'll probably notice as of this episode that although I will still keep pushing Riley to the edge of my tolerance level here, I was weakened. I was weakened in my knees. Mark Blucas. It's just really beautiful and dreamy and so sweet. And so I think it's going to affect the amount of anti-Riley-ness that I'm able to conjure for you all. But it's, you know, I'm going to do my best to be the Kristen that you know and love. I will try my best not to succumb to too much of
the patriarchy.
But Riley has I mean, Riley has some really awful moments in this episode, but for the most part, he has a really good episode until we get to the end. And I think that, yeah, we'll give him credit here. I think there's other places later where we'll give him way more credit even than he'll get here.
And continuing down the Detective Riley vein, he's like, were you just smelling that sweater? And Spike's like, no, bro, you got it all wrong. And then Riley puts his hands very compellingly on his hips. And Spike is like, I cannot deny it any longer. The power of your hands on your hips is too much for me. And then he takes a great big whiff and he's like, I'm a predator. She's my prey. It's totally natural. Yeah. And then says, Slayer Musk is bitter and aggravating.
It's good. It's a good scene. And so we've talked a little bit about like Spike and like his crush, if you even can call it that. It's deeper than that, I think, on Buffy, his obsession with Buffy, and like how sometimes those of us who have crushes on people can misinterpret things, can take things that are not intended as the return of affection and make them that. And Spike and Riley go downstairs because Spike's gonna leave. And Spike is making, I think, some decent points to Riley. Like, okay, well, she had drinks with me last night. We know that, they had drinks because...
That was an information gathering mission.
Right, exactly. But then he makes the very good point, which we have made several times this season and last season, which is, you know, she's done a lot of spells, a lot of like, you know, whatever they do to make vampires not able to take away their invitation so they can't come back in. And they've never taken Spike off the list. And I feel like he has a solid point here. Not that Buffy is desiring him, but certainly that like, why? Why?
Yeah, it is peculiar.
Mm-hmm. So,
Kristen,
yeah.
you just flew past a very important thing.
No, please go for it.
back when our two favorite dudes were still upstairs and Riley was in the process of dragging Spike out of Buffy's room so he could scoot him down to the first floor, Spike flailed and grabbed successfully a pair of frilly underthings that were hanging out of a drawer on his way out. Just a little something to take the edge off.
I think they might have been hanging. Was it a drawer or a hamper? I tried to block it out because I don't.
No. It was like a nightstand, I think.
Okay. So clean pair of Slayer undies.
Clean. Thank
stolen
God.
Stolen from her room, which Spike, no thank you. So yeah, then downstairs, speaking of piercing glances, because you mentioned how Riley put his hands on his hips upstairs, Spike's like, you know, at least I still, we might both be weaker than Buffy in strength and, you know, killing capacity, but I still have the attitude, something Spike deeply prides himself on.
Yeah, and what do you
have, a piercing glance?
Well, he also has the ability to hold Spike in the sunlight and be like, oh, am I dark enough for you now?
Yeah. Spike is very good at press. Like Spike, one of Spike's main roles as a character is to sort of press the buttons of other characters to like make their insecurities bloom.
This is like the other side of the coin of his heightened, like, you know, of having the highest emotional IQ on the show. Like he's able to see things in a broader way, like when everybody else is sort of like lost in their own bullshit, he can kind of see the bigger picture of like how everyone's interconnectivity is functioning.
Right.
And he can use that for good.
Right.
By highlighting things for people and helping them get to realizations faster, or he can know exactly which buttons to press and when and how hard.
Right. And he does. He presses the Riley insecurity button pretty hard. And then he your favorite, I'm sure he finds a blanket in the bushes on his way out to cover his head as he runs through the sunlight.
He yells, blanket, blanket. And Riley furiously kicks the blanket out.
Oh, really? I missed that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so there is a blanket.
I love to see what Riley's up to. Okay. He watches every move very closely.
So, wait.
The one thing that we didn't talk about is that, you know, while Riley is like holding Spike in the sun and saying all kinds of shit and being like, I'm the one who knows what Buffy needs, Spike is like, oh, then how come you're not at the hospital right now?
Oh, right.
And that's how Riley finds out that Joyce has gone in for some tests and that's where Buffy and Dawn are right now. And it's good that he has that information so he can go be there, but not
not that he got
but
it.
But not without Spike being like, "Oh, funny, her not
right.
her not telling you. Well, I've known for 12 hours."
And I think that it's so leather is used in this show in very detailed ways. It's you know, like Buffy and Faith. Faith is leather clad, and like by the end of the season of Buffy and Faith, like Buffy shows up to kick Faith's ass and she's wearing like red leather pants. Like Angel has a leather coat and he gives it to Buffy. Like just a lot of leather here. And I have to say that I do believe that in the next scene, suddenly Riley shows up wearing a red leather coat that he keeps on himself for the balance of this episode. And I just feel like, you know, he was like on his way to the hospital. He was like, you know, maybe Spike's right. Like, maybe I'm not bad enough.
Yeah,
and
like,
then in the window.
Not dark enough now.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
he,
the
like,
window
pulls
he saw.
His sunglasses down in the rear view and like looks over the edge of them at himself. And he's like, he nods affirmingly. Nice.
He goes like 5 miles over the speed limit on his way to the hospital.
Yeah, relatable content.
So, okay. So getting serious, Riley is at the hospital and this episode is called Shadow. And this is one of the reasons why. We find out through the CAT scan that they found a shadow in the scan of Joyce's brain and they need to do a biopsy to find out what this is. So it's very dark and concerning at the hospital and very sad.
Yeah, this sucks.
I mean, you know, without like jumping around too much, but I do want to say like they've teased it a little bit already, but this episode, it really digs into the demarcation. Specifically, there's a line that's like the medical and the magical don't often overlap. And we're really digging into that now of like, this is a show about fantasy, about, you know, like magic and demons and vampires, but also it's a show about real life. And most of the tales that we get are told through the fantastical. And so they're really in this episode, like pushing down hard on the, this, like, this is not fantastical, which I think is important to note.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so we go to the magic box and there's a conversation. Tara, by the way, I think that Tara's hair is maybe she dyed it or something. It's looking great. It's looking fantastic. So just, you know, shout out to Tara's hair. And she is saying like, hey, what if we're not finding her in these books because she's not a demon? What if she predates the written word and they're sort of theorizing? And then this thing gets brought up of like, well, they did say when the Dagon Sphere, when they were researching the Dagon Sphere, that which cannot be named was part of that information that they found. And I bring that specific line up, Jenny, because I think that the most incredible removal of Giles's glasses happens on that line. I have watched all the episodes to this point, and I think that this may be the best one. I would like to play him.
Wow.
It was so moving to me how he removed his glasses when he said that I would like to play him his jingle.
Giles, hot dad. When you were younger, you were real bad. But now you're older, you've got glasses that help you watch over us. Thank you, Giles.
Wow, one for the books.
So yeah, you know, we're learning a little bit, or they're trying to piece it together. How will we ever find her? She could be anywhere.
Right. There's no way for us to determine her moves, her habits, where she'll turn up next. And as he says that and turns, he's face to face with a petite blonde woman in a red leather dress. It's fucking Glory, but nobody knows that because Buffy's not in the shop. And right. Giles is like, I beg your, and Glory is like, uh-huh.
And it's really funny.
They do a little business. He sells her some stuff and then he comes back to the table and he's like, oh, yes, what was I saying? Yes, she could be anywhere.
Yeah, it's a good little like silly television joke. I'm here for it. I like it.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
That we as the viewer, of course, know who this is. So we cut back to the hospital and this is where, so Riley, I think, is really a wonderful boyfriend in this episode. I really do. Like, he goes, I mean, he kind of undoes some of his quality steps by the end, but we'll talk about it when we get there and, like, why he's there and what, you know, what's going on for him. But he's in the hospital and he's, like, taking care of Dawn. And in this scene, he takes off his red leather jacket. But he takes off his jacket and he puts it over her while she's sleeping. And it's really fucking sweet and really special and really, you know, I'm sure that we've talked before on the podcast about just, like, these moments that create family, right? That they're not really moments you can force or make happen. And this is one of those things. Something really bad is happening and everybody's very worried and shit needs to get taken care of. Dawn needs to be taken to school, picked up from school. Like, these like very practical moments that are happening between, you know, Buffy and Dawn, Dawn and Riley, Buffy and the Scoobies are all like these new tethers of family that are being created.
Right.
Yeah. And this is the scene where the doctor comes out and tells Buffy the results of the biopsy. Which is interesting. I wonder if any of you are listening and you are, you know, in the medical profession, if somebody has a biopsy done, maybe Joyce had already approved that, like, that they could tell Buffy. But I would imagine that would have had to be cleared, right? That they would have to tell Joyce first, normally, the results of her test before telling her kids, but maybe not. Maybe it's just.
But maybe because Buffy is, like, over 18.
Right.
It's a different thing.
Yeah. So I don't know, but I'm curious. BufferingTheVampireSlayer@gmail.com. I would love to find out the actual way that this works. So it is a brain tumor in layman's terms. And this is, you know, we had a moment of Buffy on the stairs of the house at the end of Fool for Love that obviously was, like, gutting. And her eyes, right, like, just
are definitely doing the same thing.
The same thing. They're just, they get, like, it's like a cute little doe idea. But it really is like a wide idea in the forest of, like, just terror and sadness and fear and overwhelm that we see in her eyes, and it's just awful to see. And Dr. Ben,
could you please relieve this young woman who's being barraged with questions she couldn't possibly be expected to know the answers to? Yikes.
Yeah, the doctor's asking her all manner of things. And I don't think this is an uncommon experience. I think this is an accurate reflection of, like, there are a lot of doctors in the world who are brilliant at being doctors and who are not very great at,
who have,
like,
no bedside manner.
So your
mother has a brain tumor and almost one in three people with this condition make it. Anyway, do you know if she has a cell phone, and do you know if her insurance requires copies of the MRI? Like, what,
right. So Ben comes over, makes up a lie about this doctor being needed in ICU, and then says to Buffy, like, it looked like you could use a break, which is really nice. It's a quick little Ben and Buffy moment. And then Buffy goes over to Riley and she's like, I have to go find out a spell for this. Like, I have to go find out what the magic is that will take care of this thing that's happening with my mom. And Riley just says, you know, people get sick, which is interesting that, you know, but I mean, I think Buffy's in a obviously, like, a state of panic and fear. But, you know, Riley doesn't have, like, a ton of experience with magic at this point. He's been around it. But, you know, it's surprising to see him draw that line in this scene as quickly as he does.
I think, like, somebody has to. And also, like, I mean, he's not a stranger to the supernatural.
That's true. I guess, yeah, he was in a laboratory of tinfoil doing medical work on fantastical creatures, so, or at least near it.
Right.
Yeah. So Buffy says to Riley, you know, not to tell Dawn anything yet. This is very reminiscent of me. I won't tell the full saga on this episode, but my mom went through a really terrifying medical ordeal when I was about Buffy's age, actually, and my sister was about Dawn's age, and the dynamic was exactly what is unfolding here, where, like, I was making sure that she was, you know, getting to school okay and, like, getting the practical things, and she was not told the severity of what was happening with my mom. And so this is, like, a lot of the way that this unfolds in the hospital in this episode is very familiar to me, and I think they do a good job with it. So
So,
in the words of Anya,
hey,
hey,
hey. Okay, so check this out. I watched this with closed captioning on just to be sure. So yeah. Giles sold someone a Kohl's amulet and a Sobekium bloodstone of the Sobek people. So here's what I think happened. I think that a writer was like, what are words that I haven't included yet that haven't been like introduced in the Buffyverse? Let's see. What's a place? Oh, there's that place where I got that pack of socks recently. Kohl's.
It is Kohl's, right? K-O-H-L.
It's K-O-H-L. And they're like, lizards, reptiles, Oh, and iced tea and flavored beverages. Sobekium.
Oh, God.
So I think this is like...
Fucking, oh, my God.
This is my hypothesis. This Holy is what I think shit. Is going on.
That actually checks out, Jenny, because when in this scene, I was like, ooh, Sobekium, Sobek, what is this? And I looked it up and I was like, ooh, this is a, because, you know, it's like 50-50 on this show. Sometimes I look things up and I find the article on Buffy because they've created it. And sometimes I find like a whole history of this real thing that they're referencing. And Sobek is a real ancient Egyptian deity, but he was a crocodile god. Yeah, who was either presented like as a crocodile or as a human with a crocodile head, which was really cool when I found this out. And I was like, oh, this is like really drawing on this thing. And then I was like, wait, but it's not a crocodile. It's a fucking snake. And they call it like a reptile thing. So I am actually going to support your thesis here that no one read anything except for a bottle of iced tea.
Yeah, maybe. Although now I'm looking at the Sobe web or Wikipedia, and Sobe actually allegedly is an abbreviation of South Beach for South Beach Beverage Company, which is now owned by PepsiCo, which is headquartered in Purchase, New York, just across the street from my college.
Wow. And there you have it. The circle of life.
Yeah.
Okay. So regardless of how they came to this, it would have been nice. I would have preferred to have a human with a crocodile head be the demon in this episode, to be honest
sure,
with you.
Sure.
But they realize that through Anya being like, you never sell these things together, you fool. They put it together that, oh no, it was a small blonde woman.
Yes, yes. Giles is like, why are you so worried? The young woman to whom I sold them would have had to have enormous power. Oh, dear Lord.
Record scratch. Everyone but Xander realizes that the girl was Glory. Glory was the girl.
Right.
We go to the Sunnydale carousel. Beautiful carousel that we have here in Sunnydale.
Oh, yeah.
And I would like to give a shout out to the fucking monks who have created incredible memories here for our key dog. I mean, just the specificity. She's like, it was
so
my
rich.
10th birthday. My party was at the carousel. We had just moved here, so nobody came, but my mom wanted to get her money's worth. I'm like, dang. These monks spent like at least 6 weeks creating this child's memories. So shout out to them. But this is very sweet. This is another, like, some points for Riley. Like, Riley doesn't know what to do. And so he buys dogs on ice cream and takes her to the fucking carousel to try to like cheer her up, which doesn't work, but like the thought counts. And
I was like watching this scene feeling like, why is this carousel so familiar? That can't be right. But it's the carousel in Griffith Park.
Oh, wow.
Of course. Huh. Of course, that like makes all the sense. But I was those dirt paths are really ringing a bell right now.
There's a definite this is probably not a connection that is worthy of this podcast, but here goes. I'm pretty sure there's a big carousel scene in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the movie. I'm having like a memory of a carousel. So I don't know. Find out. Go ahead. Go look. Run. Scamper. See if there's any connection. Come back to me. On that note, Jenny, why don't we take a moment to hear a word from some of our sponsors?
Heck yeah.
Today's episode is brought to you by Regal Cinemas.
If you're anything like me, you deeply enjoy going to the movies. Going to the movies is probably among my top three all-time activities. I love seeing films on the big screen. I also love being around other people who are watching the same movie with me at the same time. And of course, I love eating giant buckets of popcorn. If you feel the same and you like going to the theater, Regal Unlimited is something that just makes sense. Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in two movie visits. You can see any standard 2D movie anytime, no blackout dates, no restrictions. When you want to watch a movie in 4DX or IMAX or RPX or ScreenX, there's so many ways to watch movies these days, your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost. And with Regal Unlimited, you don't only save money on the tickets, you will also save on your snacks. And as previously mentioned, I love snacks. The only thing that can make me love a snack more is saving money on buying a snack. Members get 10% off of all non-alcoholic concession items with membership. Regal Unlimited, all you can watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in two visits. So if you're planning to see two movies this month, join Regal Unlimited and sign up now. You can sign up in the Regal app or on regmovies.com/unlimited. Sign up for Regal Unlimited using code BUFFERING and earn 10% off your 3-month subscription. Please let us know about all of the movies you see and how the popcorn is.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so what's important about this scene, besides Don's carefully sculpted, rich in detail memories, is that she's like, Buffy sure cries a lot less with you than she did with Angel.
Yeah. I thought you might be Team Dawn on this one, Jenny.
Riley's like, oh, nice. She cried a lot with Angel. thinking that things are going to go his way, but without realizing it, Dawn kind of dashes him up against the rocks by letting him know that, like, with Angel, it was like every day was the end of the world, but she doesn't get all worked up like that over you.
Yeah.
And then with the only the self-perceived wisdom that a 12-year-old or 14-year-old can really possess, Don says, I think you've been really good for her.
Which is accurate.
I think that if Riley was not feeling this specific insecurity, he would understand Dawn's point, because we've witnessed the relationship of Angel and Buffy, and we've witnessed the relationship of Riley and Buffy. And like Dawn, what Dawn is trying to say is like, you are a much more serene presence in her life. You're not like stirring the pot and sitting by your fireplace with your soul brooding. You know, there is validity to that observation. Though we all know how I feel about Riley. I do get Dawn's point, and I think that we see it in this episode, maybe more than we've seen in most other episodes. The way that he is sort of this like figure of, like, she just kind of holds to him like a rock in this episode, even though she's, you know, distracted with everything else. So anyhow, let's go back to the magic box. We've already kind of discussed this conversation. Buffy walks in and she's like, we need to find a spell. And they are pointing out to her that it's really complicated when you use magic for medical reasons. And I think Willow says something along the lines of like, it's also like her brain. And so
Like, yeah, that's super delicate, complicated. Delicate. And if I, right, like, it's not something you want to fuck up. Like, that would be a very bad fuck up. They try to get Anya to pick up on the hint to not bring up Glory.
and she catches what's going on just in time.
Which is like such a, very
the timing,
cute.
The timing of this scene is like, is really enjoyable.
Yeah, yeah. It's very cute. It's very, Anya's really, she's starting to get a foothold. She's not there yet, but she's doing her best. And I'm here for it. And then, of course, Buffy is like, so how did she get away with these items? How did she manage to get the amulet?
And, oh, my God. And Anya putting the back of her hand up against the side of her mouth. Be like, Giles told it to her.
It's good. Let's give her her fucking jingle. Come on. She earned it.
She spent one millennium demonically vengeancing. Speaks her mind and then some, you know. She's partial to the finer things and down with double boyfriends, oh yeah. Exchanging cash for goods and also services. She'd love to hold the money for ya. She'll hold that cash. Just keep the bunnies far from Anya.
Okay.
Every episode, Anya gets a jingle.
So we learn more kind of information about the reptile worshippers.
The Temple of Sobek, where they only drink Sobe.
It's actually located in South Beach.
right, of course.
And they put it together that she's going to make a cobra. And Xander gets a nice little one-liner in here like, oh, it's always, why is it always snakes? Could it just be bunnies one time to Anya's fury?
Horror.
How dare you have ruined my dreams for a week with that, Xander.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we go to a place we have not been since season one, Jenny.
Yes. It's, are you ready? It's the Sunnydale Zoo. What's been going on? What kind of improvements have been made?
Wow. Did
they get any new animals?
Do you think that the cobra was there when the hyenas were there? Like, do you think?
Yeah, they know each other.
Right. Like, he's like, he has some tails in his head. He's like, I'll go find you your key, Glory. But later I got to tell you this story about some hyenas.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're in very different areas because the cobra is in the reptile house, which, hey, weren't the Dursleys just here?
Yeah. So there's a cobra, a real cobra. It's unclear how much of this is real cobra versus fake cobra, but at least part of it is real cobra. They put the cobra into the classic cobra vessel. Classic, just exactly where you think a cobra would be put.
Yep.
Into this big vase, and they start their incantations. Glory is, you know, accurately like, God, these fucking incantations, man. They're always overwritten. They're just like, get to the point. And in comes Buffy. Jenny, you are our wrestling expert, and maybe you have something to say about this fight. But I believe, knowing nothing about wrestling, that Buffy and Glory do a wrestling move called the Patrick Swayze in this scene. I've made it up.
Okay, so I don't remember any of the visual details of this fight, so let me guess what you mean
by that. Okay,
at a certain point, Glory sidles up to the cobra vessel, puts her hands on it very gently, like one hand on each side, and then Buffy comes up behind her and puts her hands on top of Glory's hands. Is that what happened?
You're in the wrong movie.
Amazing,
incredible.
Lift, and I carried a watermelon.
Right. So I thought where you were going to go is the classic Dirty Dancing move, which is above the head, right? Baby gets lifted above Patrick Swayze's head, but it's not that. It's actually the dance that Patrick Swayze teaches Baby, which contains one of the gayest scenes in 80s movies, where Penny and Baby are learning, like Penny is teaching Baby the dance. It's real gay. If you haven't seen it, go back and get a good look at that. But the part of the move that in this dance that he first teaches her, it's sort of like they both put their arms behind the other one's neck and then sort of like pull out so that their hands are then sliding down each other's arms. It's hard to describe. Yeah, but if you know Dirty Dancing and you saw this scene, you know what I'm talking about. I am dubbing it the Patrick Swayze. So if it has a wrestling move, fine. Like if it has a wrestling name, fine. But I'm calling it Patrick Swayze from now on. Cool. So Glory kicks Buffy's ass and ends it by saying scene, a really great nod to those of us who are theater kids. And then she says, arise, arise. And the snake arises. And miracle upon miracles, Jenny, not only has the snake grown in size, but it has also sprouted two baby arms.
two little T-Rex arms, two little kangaroo.
Why? Because I thought, there must be a scene later where the arms come into play. Like, they must have needed the arms. Is he going to open a jar? Like, what is he going to do with his arms?
Well, you know what he needs them for is when he's going real fast, when he's gliding real fast, he needs to hold them out in front of himself for balance. You'll see.
I will see. Unfortunately, I will never be able to unsee.
But now, remember when we had a demon lizard that didn't have arms? That was also pretty bad.
That's true. But I think this is worse. It looks like it honestly looks when we get to the CGI scenes, it looks like it's a snake on wheels with arms. Like it just looks like it's like a toy that a kid like rolled across the room, except instead he's rolled it across Sunnydale.
The arms give it like a real action figure-y kind of thing.
Yeah. I guess it's true. It's for I don't know. It's not good, guys. Anyway, Glory is like, yo, the reason I have arisen you is because you need to go find the fucking key. Like, you have the vision in your shiny reptile eyes to see what I can't see and find the fucking key.
Hey, I just want to say, sorry, I'm looking at pictures of the snake now. Oh my God, did you see this picture of Sarah Michelle Gellar and the snake? Holy shit.
We'll put it on the internet.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, that's really good. But I'm looking at the arms. They're just like, I guess because the snake head is like a bit larger than would be proportionate for the size of the head of the human that's inside this suit, it makes the arms seem a little smaller, but they're actually not super small,
Jenny,
feeling. It's just that he's like holding them like up and
I just feel like you're missing the point, which is
What's the point?
The size of the arms, but the fact that a snake does not have arms.
Well, maybe something happens, like, evolutionarily when,
Yes, sorry, continue. There is a girl with two pennies and a snake
with
arms.
There's a girl with two pennies and a snake with some... cute little arms.
So Riley gets the fucking magic box and is like, you fucking let her go. Like, you let Buffy go to this fight. And Giles fucking understandably is like, Riley, you know Buffy. There's no letting or not letting. Like, she does what she wants to fucking do. And then Xander sidles up for a mano a mano chat with... not only do they have like a deeply emotional conversation, but Xander also says half-cocked to Riley, so keep that in mind. They have a conversation about Buffy and Xander's concern about the fact that Riley has like blown up the thing without, you know, like, what are you doing, man? And Riley walks out basically in kind of a huff, and he says, like, as he leaves, he's like, you know, let me know if she needs me, in a way that is meant, of course, to convey like she obviously will never need me.
Right.
He's feeling very overwhelmed. The Cobra is having an adventure, Jenny.
Wait. Before we go to the Cobra, I just want to highlight that at the very beginning of this scene that's back in the magic box, a customer is asking Giles for a copy of Aleister Crowley Sings, which, so far as I can tell, is not an album that actually exists. But are you familiar with Aleister Crowley?
No.
Okay, so Aleister Crowley was an English occultist, ceremonial magician, poet, painter, novelist, and mountaineer. He founded the religion of Thelema, identifying himself as the prophet entrusted with guiding humanity into the Aeon of Horus in the early 20th century.
Oh my God.
Yeah, he's got like a whole thing.
Wow. I had no, I didn't even hear the line and I had no familiarity. So thank you for that. Holy shit.
Hey, no problem.
Okay, so now can we go to church with a big snake?
We can. Did you know that we've been to the outside of this building?
No. Like, I'm we, sure that, you and I'm me, sure that Jenny when and Kristen?
Yeah, that's right. That is in Santa Barbara. Oh. We were taken there on our tour. And it was very, I believe it was very near to like a great field of roses.
Oh, wow.
And I think if I'm remembering correctly, that it's a monastery.
Wow, good. It's lucky that one of us has a brain that remembers things, you know?
Uh-huh. It sure is.
Like, you got it. Listen, kids, if you're going to start a podcast, make sure one of your two hosts has a memory. It's very helpful to the content. But why? So the cobra, the cobra has a lot of open-ended questions for me. Why he goes to the church first because that's where the monks were? Is that what we're to believe?
I believe that's the idea. And it's also so we can get our first sweet close-up of that tail swishing across the floor.
And we get, you know, I don't know if you all remember the doily pan down, beautiful doily pan down camera work that we got in season two, maybe.
Hell yeah.
But we get a beautiful, beautiful crucifix. Christ pan down to reveal the snake, which I think is very nice. A similar move, different, you know, from doily to Christ, the title of my memoir.
Your memoir?
So then my other question is, like, it seems like the snake is very emotional because it to me, in the timeline of the snake, the snake is calmly hunting and because he goes undetected. They couldn't find him. Nobody could find him. And then as soon as he locates Dawn, he becomes very reckless and he is just willy nilly all over the streets, knocking into people. Everybody sees the snake. So are we to believe that the snake is excited, like he's excited that he's achieved his mission?
I think it read to me as like there was some kind of mystical imperative, like find the key. Mm-hmm. And then as the second you fucking find it, you get back to me possibly can. That's what I got from it. I don't know if that includes knock over a fire hydrant, throw a like rolling dumpster into the side of a small sporty red car.
Giles' snake chase in that car is to be noted. He looks pretty great. He looks way better in that car than he looked in the Citroen.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, good thing he's not driving that anymore.
So there's a quick scene where Buffy calls on a payphone. I'm at a payphone.
Oh, boy. She's icing her shoulder. She's letting Giles know that the big snake is on the loose. And then we get like a melancholy music kind of
melancholy
montage.
And the infinite montage.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Riley's at the bar drinking. Then Riley lets that girl vampire bite him and he stakes her. I say character assassination.
Yeah, I mean, this is like, whoa. What is even happening here? Riley,
you know, when you like are all of a sudden you're like in a car going in one direction and then all of a sudden you're in a car going in a totally different direction, but like, nothing really, it doesn't feel like anybody turned the wheel or anything.
Right.
It is just like, whoa, what's happening?
Yeah, it's almost, I mean, because they pull back, right? The previously on brought us this scene from a while back where he's like, she doesn't love me. And so they're like pulling on these themes.
That was the first like hard turn without like a ton of.
Right. But it's also like, I just feel like there are episodes that we've seen where it would have been even more believe. I still am like, I don't know about this turn, but it's just like it in this episode. I don't know. I want to be on the train that you probably a lot of you want me to be on, which is like Riley couldn't take it because like da 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 da. But a lot of what we see in this episode is like Riley doing really great things. And so it is a pretty hard turn that like this insecurity has driven him to not talk to Buffy, to whatever. And when her mom has just been diagnosed with a brain tumor, to make this choice. And so if we're going to believe that Riley has made this choice and this is not just the writers taking a turn, this is really shitty, really shitty, really like a big bummer. But we'll see. We'll see where this goes. We continue with the big snake adventure. The snake is now sniffing the carousel horses.
And Dawn is at the magic box. Buffy comes in. They hug each other in this very like tender moment. And Buffy's like, has anyone seen the big snake?
And the big snake is like, oh, I have.
Yeah, the big like, snake like smashes in through the window and the like, cane is like,
oh, yeah. We just went on our separate things.
There. Yeah, what did you say? Well, I'll tell you what I said.
I said the snake smashes through the window and is like, oh, yeah.
It's pretty much, I think they could go together. Mine was in a top hat saying, da-da-da-da-da-da.
Oh, beautiful. Michigan J. Frog. The actual.
Yes. The WB. He mascot. Learned a couple things from the WB Frog.
Right.
So, which I would have preferred, honestly. I would have liked the episode better if the WB Frog was the demon. Okay, so the snake is like sniff, 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 puts his top hat down and looks directly into Dawn's key soul as Dawn, A plus screaming, Michelle Trachtenberg, fantastic screaming. She's screaming, and the snake is like, peace, got what I needed.
And
Willow
off to the races.
Right, off to the snake races. And Willow is like, why was the snake afraid of Dawn? And Buffy just looks at Giles, still the only person who knows what's up here, and says, it knows. And Giles is like, skirk!
To the Giles mobile.
Okay, so Giles learns her name is Glory, right? Because Buffy says it in the car, and he's like, Glory? And Buffy's like, yeah, I heard the minion call her that. So now everybody knows this person's name. We also learn an incredibly important fact in the next scene, which is that Glory loves to get shoes from Aldo.
I wanted to talk about this because there's nothing wrong with Aldo. But
Aldo,
I feel like they're
my choice of where to get shoes. But
sure,
is,
sure.
But I am not Glory.
Fancy. I wouldn't think like, what's a luxury shoe that
right.
Somebody living in a hotel room that has a round bed would wear.
I do have to say though that like, so I don't buy it. I don't buy that Glory would be, I think that, you know, she'd be like getting some Carrie Bradshaw level shoes. But I also have to say that there may be a bit of Glory that's practical because I get my shoes from Aldo because I do think those like super high patent leather heels that I wore to prom, those were from Aldo. And so like they make high-heeled shoes. They make fancy shoes, but they are a little bit more comfortable. So Glory's just trying to, you know, maybe she's got like her really expensive red bottoms over in one closet, but then she's got like her Aldo, like this looks hot, but also is like practical for fighting.
Yeah.
I can stand
and suck brains in it all the day long.
Exactly. She's like tick frickin' talk. Not to my cousin Vinius twice in one episode, but she's like, my snake clock is ticking. Then we see Snake on wheels, and Buffy has overtaken the Cobra quite literally, like Khaleesi on her dragon.
Wow, but Buffy, with a chain and some choking.
Mm-hmm. Buffy sits
and this sneaky little fuck. This sneaky little fuck.
Would you
plays
call him a snakey,
dead?
Snaky little fuck?
This snaky little fuck plays dead and tricks Buffy and then is back on.
Yeah, just kidding. And then she's like, okay, the chain didn't work. So I'm going to punch your snake face until you die.
And this like sucks. And like, obviously this is like Buffy doing something about something because she's powerless in the face of whatever's going on with her mother and her mother's health. And this is something she can do.
Right. This is very reminiscent of Faith, actually. Remember the scene with...
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Faith, where Faith is just obliterating that vampire or whatever.
Right. So psychologically, this is like, ugh, this is rough. But then, you know, what really takes the edge off is when they zoom out to a wide shot and you see Buffy punching the snake and it's like rubber head is just like bounce, 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 bounce.
I had the thought of like, you know, as an actor, I saw, so a friend of ours and actually was on the podcast way back, Shannon Woodward,
She posted something recently. I think it was about cats. And she was like, the quote was like, when they tell you they'll fix it in post, you know? And it was like, for the image, it was like the cat's actual hand, like having actual human hands. Like
human fingers.
And like holding them like cat paws. And I thought of that in seeing this. I was like, probably like, you know, as an actor, you have to kind of believe that like, even though you're punching a ridiculous rubber snake head, they're gonna use all the tools they have to fix it for you later. And they did not.
No, they did not.
Oh, God. Okay, sorry. I laughed like that watching it, and I forgot all about it, so I'm glad you brought it up again.
Happy to help. And then from up on high, Gloria is just continuing to stare out the window of her hotel. We assume she doesn't see Buffy punching the snake, because she's not laughing, and she just keeps staring, waiting.
She's like Bette Midler in Hocus Pocus. She's like, book, except she's like, snake. Her snake never comes. And so then we go from the fantastical to the harsh reality of the hospital. We end the episode where we began the episode in the hospital, actually. And Joyce is about to tell Dawn. And so this is rough. And I don't like what they do with Riley here either, because they really, if you haven't just rewatched this scene in the hospital, is like Buffy is like, I'll send Dawn in by herself and you can talk to her. And she goes out into the hallway and Riley comes up, and Riley says to, first of all, Riley's wearing the classic wear of that post-hickey / vamp makeout sesh.
The best thing about Riley getting bit in the neck by a vampire is that he's got a reason to wear this turtleneck. Dig that shit out of the back of your closet, my boy, and put it on post-haste.
So Riley holds her and says, like, let it out. And she says, very understandably, I can't, like, we all know this emotional state, right? Where you know if you even so much as let out one tear, you're not stopping, and then you're not going to be able to get it under control. And that's basically what she says, right? They need me.
Yeah.
If I start, I won't be able to stop. And what I don't love is, and I know that it's connecting to what we saw with Riley and the vamp and whatever, but like, I just really believe after everything we've seen Riley do in this episode with Dawn and like whatever, that in this environment, I know I'm betraying so many of you, but I don't buy that Riley in the hospital with this is going to feel left out. Like, it seems like the situation is too extreme for what we're seeing manifest in Riley at the end of the episode. I buy it in the grave, in the cemetery. I buy it with the demons. I buy it with the fighting. I buy it in all those places. But I think that for most of us, and I do include Riley in this, I think that when somebody is sick and you're in a hospital, these things don't come to the surface unless you're like an actual asshole, which believe it or not, I don't think Riley is an actual asshole. I think that he would have understood this and he would have just sat down in that hospital chair and like waited for them to come out.
Yeah, it doesn't feel true to his character. Like, the only kind of sense that I could make of it is that what we're to take, like, I could understand maybe a little bit more if we were to take Riley being left alone in the hall after that exchange, as like all he wants to do is to be there for her.
Right.
But maybe it's kind of feeling like
he can't help no matter what.
He can't help no matter what. Maybe he's feeling a little bit like she doesn't need me. Maybe he's feeling that. Another thing that I was thinking about was like Riley clearly wants to be a partner.
Yeah.
Riley wants to be in partnership. And doesn't necessarily always feel like Buffy does. Like, I don't think we ever see Buffy thrive in partnership.
Right. And that's like, it's like the overtasked person, you know, I mean, obviously her tasks are a bit heftier than some of ours, but you know, like she's putting out so many fires so much of the time that it's not very possible or accessible for her to be in partnership in that way.
And so maybe what we're to take from this last shot of him is like, it's really maybe starting to sink in a little bit that perhaps they don't want the same things out of a relationship.
Yeah, I like that interpretation more than the way I saw it. And sometimes I recently, a friend of the pod, Joanna Robinson, framed the way that I view things as I am an emotional viewer. And it really resonated for me. Like, I get very like emotionally invested in things when I watch them. I'm not a critic at heart. Like, I don't, it has to be like pretty fucking bad for me to be like, this was bad. I get invested. And so sometimes I like conflate what I don't, you know, like what I didn't want to be happening in this scene is what I kind of made the scene in my mind. So I like your assessment a little bit better than mine. And I get that. And I also get how some of Riley's insecurities can obviously like make the jump from, you know, fighting and demon stuff to just everything when you're feeling really overwhelmed and like you aren't getting what you need. And I think that that's correct. So, yeah, it's pretty somber. Okay, let's take a turn. Let's take a turn out of this somber corner of discussion and go headlong into the sexual tension wards.
Sexual tension award.
Well, it's time once again for the most important part of the podcast, the sexual tension awards. For this episode, we respectfully and humbly submit the following nominees for your consideration. First up, for a smoky little exchange of, I don't know what kind of action you're looking for. It's Xander and Riley. Let them live. Let them love. Let them laugh.
Cast your votes for the half-cocked couple. Second up, we have Glory and her shoes. She is very into her shoes and the way they feel on her perfect feet.
And how they highlight her ankles or fail to do so.
Yes.
Third up, well, I think this is the only actual character's mouth touching part of other characters' body thing that happens in the whole episode. It's Riley and Sandy the vampire.
Yeah, I mean, I would call that sexual tension, you know.
And last but not least, Jenny, I'm a big, a lifelong fan of the film Dirty Dancing. I
know you are.
I've watched it over and over and over again in my youth, in my adulthood. And I would be remiss if not to nominate Glory and Buffy for their beautiful wrestling fight dance move that I named the Patrick Swayze.
Great.
You can participate in our sexual tension democracy over on our Twitter. What's our Twitter, Jenny?
It's at BufferingCast, please.
The poll will stay open for 1 week, so get on over there and vote, and we'll see who wins. This was not an episode rife with sexual tension. We did our best. We hope we did you proud. All right, Jenny, we've done it yet again. First episode of 2020. We've got snakes. We've got hospitals. We've got some other stuff.
Yeah, and if you haven't seen the picture at this point of the man cobra in a towel holding a roll of toilet paper, do yourself a favor and look up that image.
Yes, please do. Jenny, when you're not looking at beautiful pictures of man cobras and towels, where can people find you?
Well, I'm Jenny Owen Youngs, and when I'm not watching Buffy and shopping at Kohl's and chugging Sobe, I'm usually writing and recording songs. You can learn more about my musical life and hear some of those songs over at JennyOwenYoungs.com. And you give me a shout on Twitter at Jenny Owen Youngs. Also, I will remind you that I put out a new EP and a holiday song at the end of last year, which you can find. The EP is called Night Shift. The holiday song is called Maybe Next Year. And also, you can hear more of my speaking voice over on my other television recap podcast about a tiny blonde protagonist, Veronica Mars Investigations.
Jenny, the New York Times wrote about your fucking holiday song.
Yeah, no big deal. It was like we picked 13 songs, thereby, you know, a group of peers, including Taylor Swift, Blink-182,
wow,
Macklemore, Jenny Owen Youngs, some other people are on that list.
Pretty fucking fantastic.
Pretty cool. Very cool. Thank you, New York Times.
Way to round out the decade, Jenny, with a New York Times.
Oh, yeah.
Write-up. Yes, when I'm not buying my practical shoes for fighting at Aldo, you can find me
over at KristinNolene.com. You probably by 2020 know how to spell it, but it's KristinNolene. That is also my Twitter handle, my Instagram handle. You can find me in all of those places. And we are just rounding the bend to the last episode almost of my so-called life podcast with Joanna Robinson. We just have, I think, 3 or 4 episodes left before we finish it. So you should come on over. It's called The Boiler Room, and we're at Boiler Room Cast. So join us for our 19-episode journey. And yeah, I don't know. What else should we tell people? Oh, how about where to find us?
Buffering the Vampire Slayer is on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at BufferingCast, or you can drop us an email at BufferingTheVampireSlayer@gmail.com, or you can leave us a voicemail at area code 216, that's Cleveland, 30BUFFY.
Hell yeah. We have merch, as always. You can find that, all of the Smash the Demon Lizard patriarchy relevant yet again this week at our store, bufferingthevampireslayer.com. Just click on shop. Also, we have some Buffy watches and concerts coming up for our patrons. The next Buffy watch will be a viewing of Scream 2. I'm very excited about it.
And, hell yeah.
You can find out all the information by clicking on Patreon from that website. And what else? Oh, rate and review us if you haven't already. It helps us.
And
if you already rated and reviewed us, go on over and rate and review Angel on Top, because it helps people find us and them.
Oh yeah. Is that it? Is that all the information they need?
I think that's all the information.
Until next time.
Woo!
Yeah.
Punch it good, punch it like you know you should. Punch that snake up till it's dead, 'cause you got people you need to protect. It's a snake, it's a snake, it's a great big snake. It's a snake, it's a snake, it's a great big snake. It's a snake, it's a snake, it's a great big snake. It's a snake, it's a snake, it's a great big snake. Living in Sunnydale, you see some wild things that you just have to accept. Giant praying mantises, cyborg demon hybrids, my sister's a mystical energy key for crying out loud. But you know what I can't swallow? I watched Troy put that cobra into that clay pot. Did that cobra have any arms when you put it in there, Glory? I don't think so. Where'd the fucking arms come from? Punch that snake up. Punch it good. Punch it like you know you should. Punch that snake up till it's dead, 'cause you got people you need to protect. It's a snake, it's a snake, it's a great big snake. It's a snake, it's a snake, it's a great big snake. It's a snake, it's a snake, it's a great big snake. It's a snake, it's a snake, it's a great big snake. It's a snake, it's a snake, it's a great big snake. It's a snake, it's a snake, it's a great big snake. It's a snake, it's a snake, it's a great big snake. It's a snake, it's a snake, it's a great big snake.
Nowadays, trends and news cycles change faster than we can blink. But there are some things that withstand the test of time. And if you're looking for a connection to something timeless, and maybe also a glimpse of life at a slower pace, I believe everyone can relate to the very human experiences explored in Jane Austen's novels. And that's where I come in. My name is Alison Larkin. I'm a writer, comedian, and narrator and host of The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin. I spent a lot of my childhood in the part of England where Jane Austen lived and wrote, and now that I live in the States, nothing gives me a sense of homecoming quite like narrating her books. On this show, you'll listen to award-winning narration. I'll give myself a pat on the back for that, as well as conversations with actors, writers, and other fascinating people who all share a passionate love for Jane Austen. So please join me as we embark on a wonderful journey through Jane Austen's work. Be sure to listen and subscribe to The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin, wherever you get your podcasts.